welcome to Shattering Myths. This is the program where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, with military and economic schemes. This morning we're going to begin by piercing an economic myth, and then we're going to turn to piercing a political myth. Then we will move on to piercing a religious myth, and along the way I am quite certain that we will pierce and shatter some military myths. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, I'm going to try to help you understand what's happening, and I'm going to explain why these things are important to you and to your family. Then during the second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms, through His covenant, by way of His Torah, which means teaching and guidance, not law. If you are rational, this will be the best part of today's program. Our phone number, if you would like to question, criticize, or affirm anything I have to say, is 877-300-7645. And for those who have listened over the last few weeks, we've had some wonderful callers, so I would encourage you to participate. The press and the Democratic Party is having a field day with the clandestinely recorded conversation of Mitt Romney. Now, of course, they're not speaking about the fact that this was a fundraising dinner and that Jimmy Carter's grandson, the great anti-Semite, the great deceiver, the man who actually is most responsible for creating Al-Qaeda, the man who would equate Israel and the best treatment of Muslims in the world with the South African apartheid, that Jimmy Carter, his grandson, is the one that snuck into it and clandestinely recorded the conversation, speaking about dishonorable tricks. Now, what Mitt Romney said was absolutely accurate. I'm going to address just one of those issues that we covered yesterday again today because it was brought up by the nitwit known as Nancy Pelosi. She was talking about two things. She said, you know, even thousands of millionaires pay no tax. Because Romney made the statement that 47% of Americans pay no tax at all. It is a statement of fact. It is true. And in a infinitesimal percentage of them. I mean, we're talking about 0.01% of them are millionaires. And when you raise the specter of, well, you know, this is the rich not paying their fair share is the reason that 47% of Americans pay no tax, as opposed to a system that has been jury-rigged so that the majority of Americans, because it's actually over 50, that pay nothing, or essentially nothing. When you jury-rig the system where people aren't participating, they're not contributing to it, but they're taking from it, you have a system that is destined to fail. And that's the point that needs to be raised. As for a millionaire not paying any tax, taxes on income. If the millionaire is retired and they make no income, they will pay no income tax. But to say they will pay no tax at all is an outright lie, Ms. Pelosi. They pay property tax. They pay sales tax. They often pay other forms of tax in addition to that. But they're all paying property tax, they're all paying sales tax, and so for you to say that millionaires, thousands of them, pay no tax at all is an absolute lie. But it works with her constituency because they don't think. The only way that a wealthy person who is a millionaire, that's not even wealthy by today's standards, but a wealthy individual would pay no tax is if the investments that they are now living on, they've spent their life working and earning a living and being responsible, what a novel idea, so that they saved money for their retirement and that those retirement funds are invested in the economy, in businesses, in the stock market, in bonds that fund business and the like. And when the economy turns south and the value of those investments deteriorates, they lose money. You don't pay taxes on losses. Why not tell the truth, Ms. Pelosi? Or don't you like the truth? Do you prefer the lie instead? As for the 47% who are locked into Obama, that's the nature of politics, by the way. There's 40% in America that are locked into the Liberal Party. There's 47% that are locked into the Conservative Party. Those terms are not even are relative. There are liberal spenders in both sides and conservatives spenders on both sides. But there are about 47% of Americans that are as political as they are religious. That's their party. They were born into it in their family, or they were indoctrinated into it by their university. That is their community. That is what they do. They don't bother to think about the candidates. They don't think about what they say. They just utter platitudes and march along. It's about 6% that's in the middle, the non-committed that the politicians try to lure. Now, that is the reason that during a primary campaign, the liberal will say things that are astonishingly liberal to render the nomination, and why conservatives are always trying to prove that they are the most conservative on the Republican side to garner that nomination. But once they run for public office, all of them change their rhetoric and they march right to the middle. So his statement was accurate in terms of 47% wouldn't vote for him if they, even if he proved, which is easy to do, that everything that Obama has said and done have been counter to not only what he promised, but counter to what was in the best interest of this country. This leaves us with the victim line. When Occupy Wall Street was trashing the only active part of our economy, and make no mistake, it is business, it is corporations that drive our economy. You remove business and corporations from the United States and it ceases to exist. They are the source of virtually all funds. Import duties, not only corporate taxation, but personal taxation. They provide the income that is then personally paid in income taxes. They are the means to collect sales tax. They're the means to collect personal income tax. The government has required them to be the tax collector. Business is what drives America, and yet the Occupy Wall Street made business the enemy, and their mantra was that the 99% was victimized by the 1%. As opposed to some 10 to 20% of Americans driving business that benefited all Americans, that was the mantra. The 99% were being victimized by the 1%. Now you might say it's inappropriate to say that 47% of Americans bought into the mantra that the 99% were being victimized by the 1%. But when Occupy Wall Street was doing their thing, there were lots of polls across America to find out who sympathized with them and who thought that they were absolute, resolute idiots. Guess what? 47% of Americans said that they agreed with the mantra of Occupy Wall Street. So there is absolute proof on the most opportune and the most germane issue related to this that proves that he was right there again. That's about 47% of Americans that not only don't pay any tax, not only are net beneficiaries of government indulgences, not only think that they're entitled to such things, not only they would never vote for a Republican candidate, but to think that the banks, the corporations, those big business honchos, those who have actually succeeded are victimizing them. It's the truth. And what's amazing here is that the truth is no longer an alibi. Now, let's move on to the second thing that was said that was really dominant in the news yesterday. It's the very thing that got was played out very heavily. Newt Gingrich made a comment and called the Palestinians a mythical people. And even old Mitt Romney had a conniption fit, saying that was not, you know, that's not positive. You can't be saying that kind of thing. That's not presidential, because he was running against Newt Romney, Newt Gingrich at the time. Well, now Mitt Romney says that there can never be peace between the Palestinians and Israel. This two-state solution is not feasible because the Palestinians want to destroy Israel. Their motivation is to destroy Israel. Now, that's mostly true. But now he's in a position where he can't really defend it because he criticized Newt Gingrich when he dared tell the truth. There is no such thing as a Palestinian people. There had been, but the last so-called Palestinian ceased to exist well over 3,000 years ago. They were the ancient Philistines. They were wiped out by the Babylonians and the Assyrians. Every last person. There is no surviving Philistine. There is no place called Palestine. Never has been. There was a Philistia, but Philistia was the area around Gaza today that was the ancient homeland of these Philistines who were annihilated over 3,000 years ago. So when you hear of a Palestinian people and the Palestinian people have rights and that they want a homeland called Palestine, it is a marketing myth that has been perpetrated by political and religious liars. It only prevails because most people don't take the time to search for the truth. As for the Palestinians wanting Israel destroyed as opposed to a two-state solution, since there are no such thing as Palestinians, we must look at what is it that causes them to have a nexus. What is it that unites them? What do they have in common, since it isn't race? Ah, Islam. There used to be about 20% of the Arabs living in Israel that were Christians. Now it's perhaps as much as 1%, could be as much as 2%, but insignificant. So the Arabs living in Israel, the common thread that they do share, the one nexus, is Islam. Now for those who do not know the Quran, for those who have not read the Quran, for those who have not read Hitler's Mein Kampf, it will surprise you, but it is nonetheless true that the Quran is a more anti-Semitic book. It is more anti-Jewish than Hitler's Mein Kampf. It is more violent than Hitler's Mein Kampf. In the book Prophet of Doom, I took 77 pages of that 1,000-page book, and I set side by side Hitler's recitals from Mein Kampf and Muhammad's recitals in the Quran and Hadith, juxtaposing them, proving that the message was the same, although in Islam, more merciless. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. You can call us at 877-300-7645. I'd like to conclude the thought on Mitt Romney's casual conversation with a patron at dinner, where he spoke about the impossibility of a peace treaty between the so-called Palestinians and Israel, and that in saying that there can't be a two-state solution because the so-called Palestinians are committed to the destruction of Israel. Now, I have shared with you that the Quran and the Hadith of Muhammad, his recitals, are more anti-Semitic than Hitler's Mein Kampf. I mean, the Quran calls Jews apes and swine. It says that their faces have been turned into their asses and that Allah did it. It's full of stories where Allah is torturing them. The first Muslims are robbing them and they are enslaving their children. They're killing them. It is a horrendous portrayal. And there are bonus points, bonus jihad points, for killing a Jew. In fact, Muhammad's most famous prophecy is, he says, in the last days, there will be a, and now he said the last days would be 500 years after his death, so his prophecy is already wrong because we passed that about 900 years ago. But nonetheless, he said that after that time, the rocks themselves would speak to Muslims, and the rocks would scream out to Muslims, "There's a Jew hiding behind me, kill him." Well, the reality is that Islam exists first and foremost to promote Allah as God. Allah was modeled after Satan, spends all of his time torturing people in hell. His every characteristic is satanic in nature. But the second person purpose of Islam is to render Yahweh's messengers, his scribes, his prophets, moot. The best way to do that, since the every messenger of Yahweh, in terms of being a prophet or scribe, is a Yehudim from Yisrael, is to make Yehudim and Yisrael the enemy. The thought is, if you can annihilate Yisrael, if you can kill every Yehudim Jew, then Yahweh would have no messengers, and Satan's claim to be God would be pervasive. And so, the Quran speaks of wiping them out to the last, killing every last one of them. And so, whether or not Mitt Romney is a student of history, which I kind of doubt, whether or not he has studied Islam and understands it, which I kind of doubt, or if he is just a casual observer of the news and realizes that that is the only rational conclusion. Let me give you a great example. The Muslim Brotherhood prevailed in throwing out Hosni Mubarak in Egypt, and they were allowed to hold their own rallies for the first time. Prior to them, there had been, on average, you know, anywhere from 5,000 to 10,000 people in the central square of Cairo protesting on behalf of this mythical illusion known as democracy, which is a horrible thing. We should not be seeking democracy. It's mob rules. What's wrong with America is that we've moved in that direction, unfortunately. Now, when the Muslim Brotherhood was allowed to return and the head of the Muslim Brotherhood came out of hiding for the first time and spoke to Egyptian Muslims, 2 million people showed up in the square. Went from 5,000 to 10,000 to 2 million. Guess what their chant was? One chant, one mantra, not only spoken by the imam, but screamed by the 2 million in attendance. One guess. Was it, hey, well, it's really swell. Now we can put away the weapons of war and be live in peaceful coexistence with Israel. Now we can demonstrate how tolerant and loving and all accepting this wonderful religion of Islam is. Now we can tell the world that Islam really means peace. Was that the mantra? No. The mantra was death to Israel. More than anything, being anti-Semitic, wanting to destroy Israel, is the most unifying cause amongst fundamental Muslims. You cannot be a good Muslim and not hate Jews and want to see Israel destroyed. The reality, what he said is undeniable. What Romney said is true. It's too bad that the media portrays him as having misspoken, having said something that is a disadvantage. But it is probably true that telling people the truth will make you unpopular. That's something to think about, isn't it? I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. For those who would like to engage in this discussion, it is 877-300-7645. We're going to turn our attention to a satirical magazine publishing cartoons today in France when we return. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Diana. On this program, we are committed to exposing the myths of religion, politics, economics, and militarism. Now we're going to turn our attention to a myth associated with both politics and religion. Charlie Hebdo has been in the news many times in the past. It's a satirical magazine published in France. As a satirical magazine, you know, in America, we don't so much read satirical magazines as we watch satirical programs. South Park would be an example of a satirical program. Anyway, Charlie Hebdo is publishing today some satirical cartoons that allegedly feature Muhammad. Now, in the past, in fact, quite recently, they remember the butler scandal with the Pope? They made fun of the Pope and his butler. And of course, the Catholic Church tried to sue them. They took this to court as opposed to killing people, and they were unsuccessful in trying to accuse the magazine of inciting hate. You see, in many countries, in Canada, for example, great example, if you say something about a religion, even if it's true, that causes people to be upset, you are guilty of committing the crime of inciting hate. Now, that exists, that crime exists in France, it exists in the UK, it exists in Israel, it exists in many countries around the world. And it exists, for example, in Denmark. And so you're in a situation where the truth isn't an alibi again. If you say Muhammad was a pedophile, Muhammad was incestuous, Muhammad was a rapist, Muhammad was a mass murderer, Muhammad was a terrorist, and if you think that these characteristics, individual personas, character flaws are bad, then you ought not listen to his spiritual advice. You ought not be a Muslim. Now, it's all truthful, it's all reasonable, all rational. But in France, in Canada, for you to say such things, even though they are undeniably true, and there is no other way to depict Muhammad accurately than to depict him as a sexual pervert and mass murdering terrorist. There is no other accurate way to present it. But if you say that, you're guilty of committing a hate crime. So when they made fun of the Pope and his butler incident, it's kind of funny there because the Roman Catholic Church got themselves in trouble because their cardinals were shown in cronyism and nepotism. The people would donate the money. The higher ups were pocketing the money. They were paying bills that were four, five, six times what they should cost for gardening and for painting and for other kinds of maintenance in the Vatican, and were giving the bids, the jobs to those who were charging 500% more than they should cost, and other people were willing to provide them because they were relatives or because they were skimming and receiving bribes. And so the documents that the butler released were amongst the various archbishops and cardinals disclosing the truth about the Vatican. If you're a Roman Catholic and you donate money to them, shame on you twice over. But that's all that was happening. So the butler didn't do anything other than he says, you know, this is information that people ought to know. We ought not sweep this under the rug. And so the Pope wanted to put the butler on trial and have his butler go to jail because he revealed the truth about the Roman Catholic Church. Roman Catholicism, like Islam, cannot survive when confronted by the truth. And so their best response was to say the magazine was inciting hate. Well, this morning they're presenting some cartoons that allegedly depict Muhammad. One of the milder cartoons in Wednesday's edition on the is the cover image, which shows an Orthodox Jew pushing a turbaned figure in a wheelchair with the caption, "You mustn't mock." Now, God himself mocks. Let me give you a great example. When Yahweh is in Yirmiyahu, which is a book written to Goyim, dictated by Yahweh through Yirmiyahu, it means Yahweh raises up, book devoted to educating Goyim, Gentiles, about what they need to know, especially about why God hates religion. Why he hates politics. He goes into the same story about religious leaders are only interested in lining their own pockets. hypocrites. They're in it for either sex, power, and money, and they're playing the people for fools, and you ought not contribute to them, you ought not trust them, you ought not believe them, you ought to walk away from them and be as far away from religious leaders as absolutely possible, and their religions. And in the midst of that, he wants to make a point, and he says, you need to know how I would see you if you are beguiled by one of these religions. He's writing this to Gentiles, so, you know, the primary religions are going to be Islam and Christianity. He says, I want you to know, God is speaking here, I want you to know how I would see you if you are covered with and immersed in religion. He says, I'm going to see your faces as if they were covered with bull dung. Now, that's mocking, for sure. Bull dung. Now, it's a very specific graphic example because the bull was the symbol of the sun gods of yesteryear. It was the most common trait. It's why the children of Israel made the golden calf in homage to the Egyptian sun god. Christmas and Easter are based upon the sun going through the constellation of Taurus the bull, both of those. Dedicated and devoted to sun god worship on the Sundays when it was celebrated closest to the vernal equinox. And so God is saying, you know, the bull is the symbol of everything that is wrong. It's par. It means to corrupt. It means to disassociate from people because of corruption is the very term for bull in Hebrew. And he says, you look to me like the excrement that comes out of the south end of a bowl heading north. Because you've covered yourself in religious crap. Don't do that. Rather than looking all beautiful, and so here you've got this Orthodox Jew, which God would see exactly that way. He would see the Orthodox Jew as being covered, having slathered themselves with the most vile of ingredients, stinking to high heaven, looking repulsive. That's how God would see him. And he would see the turbaned figure, whether it was Muhammad or an imam in a mosque, the same way. As vile, as disgusting, as rubbish, stinking, slimy muck. So, it says the editor of Charlie Hebdo said, these publications will not cost lives. Who killed the people? We're not killing people. We're not the violent ones. We're just journalists. Same thing is true with the movie. Same thing is true with burning the Qurans. Burning the Quran didn't kill anybody. People who burnt the Qurans, the people who made the movie, the people who drew the cartoons, they didn't kill anybody. They didn't tell anybody to go kill anybody. The problem is that this is the way that Muslims respond. And they respond this way because it's the way that their lone prophet responded. Muhammad responded exactly this way. If anyone insulted him, he made certain that they were killed. So the magazine editor said, you know, I'm not telling people that are Muslims to go out and read Charlie Hebdo. Just like I wouldn't go into a mosque and listen to speeches that go against everything I believe and know to be true. That's the rational response. It's the moral response. It's the enlightened response. It's the response associated with free will and freedom. But you see, Islam knows no free will. It knows no freedom. Islam means submission. It means surrender. The Quran teaches that people ought not have choice. They just ought to surrender to Islam. And those who do not surrender to Islam have to be hunted down and killed. Now, there is the head, I'm assuming that he is an imam at the Paris Grand Mosque. He told the Associated Press, this is his line. He said, this is disgraceful, this is hateful, this is a useless and stupid provocation. Now, was it disgraceful and hateful, a useless and stupid provocation? No. What the magazine is presenting is the classless nature of the film. Now, Charlie Hebdo doesn't know if the themes in the film are true or false. The themes in the film are mostly true. Muhammad was suicidal. Muhammad was a sexual pervert. Muhammad engaged in pedophilia. And Muhammad was a ruthless mass murderer. And there were many times that Muhammad murdered hundreds of people just while he orchestrated it, made grand theater, and then one at a time brought Jewish men up to cut off their heads before him, one after another, hundreds upon hundreds of them, and then let his men play a game of lots to choose who gets to rape the Jewish women, selling the children into slavery. So that depiction of Muhammad is accurate. The problem is that the movie is so stupidly done and doesn't actually cite the Islamic sources, so it's kind of a poorly crafted document, if you will. And so Charlie Hebdo is mocking how poorly the movie is crafted, and it's mocking how Muslims are responding to it. And so here's this, Emma. This is the disgraceful and the hateful, useless and stupid provocation. Then he says, we Muslims are not like animals of Pavlov to react at each insult. He said, referring to the Russian psychiatrist who pioneered researching techniques into conditioning. But is that not the case? Are not Muslims the world over responding like Pavlov's dogs? Burn a Quran, riot and kill. Create a silly movie trailer, riot and kill. Draw a cartoon, riot and kill. It is a great example of why we ought to be extraordinarily careful as to what we say. Religious leaders are all hypocrites. Most cases, the opposite of what they say is true. And this is a great example. Yes, indeed. Muslims are responding like Pavlov's dogs. Not just drooling at the sight of food, but killing under the least of all provocations. When we return, I'm going to share some stories from the Hadith and Quran that explain why Muslims are responding like drooling and vicious dogs. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I had promised that I was going to share one story out of the Quran and Hadith that explains the response that Muslims are engaged in today when you mock Muhammad. You say something critical of Muhammad's sadistic and repulsive character, that Muslims have been conditioned like Pavlov's dogs to kill, as opposed to respond with words or reason. There are probably 15 or 20 of these stories, but I was just searching Prophet of Doom. I figured this one's as good as any to convey the nature of Islam and why this is happening. For those who have a copy of Prophet of Doom or those who wish to read it online, this is in the Mein Kampf chapter. It begins by citing Quran, the 59th surah, beginning at the second verse. This is directly out of the Quran, again, the 59th surah. It was Allah who drove the Jewish people from their Yathrib homes and into exile. They refused to believe. They refused to submit to Islam. You did not think that they would go away. And they imagined that their stronghold would protect them against Allah. But Allah's torment came upon them from where they did not suspect. He terrorized them. How did he terrorize them? Through the first Muslims. Their homes were destroyed. How? By the first Muslims. So learn a lesson, men who have eyes. This is my warning. Had I not decreed the expulsion of the Jews, banishing them into the desert, mind you, this had been their home for centuries. Had I not decreed the expulsion of the Jews, banishing them to the desert, I would have punished them in this world and in the next, and they shall taste the punishment of my hellfire. This is because they resisted Allah and they resisted His message and messenger. If anyone resists Allah, verily, Allah is severe in punishment and reprisal. So, there is a Jewish man. In fact, I'll read it directly from the Surah. This is from Ishaq's Surah. It's a biography of Muhammad. It's the earliest extant source regarding Muhammad's life. From Ishaq 365. Qab bin Asharaf was from the Jewish clan of the Banu Nadir. when he heard the news of what happened with the Jewish community in Yathrib, today's Medina, he said, can this be true? Did Muhammad actually kill these people? They were fine men. If Muhammad has slain them, then the belly of the earth is a better place for us than its surface. Well, we continue this from Ishaq, the same page. It says, drive off that fool of yours so that you might be safe from his talk that makes no sense. So what Ashraf said is that send off that fool because you need to be safe from his rhetoric that makes absolutely no sense. Why do you taunt those who mourn over their dead and yet kill you? But now, because of what you have done, you have become like wild jackals, speaking to the Arabs now in Yathrib, who murdered these Jews. So the prophet said, who will rid me of Ashraf? He told the truth, but who will rid me of Ashraf? Does that mean who's going to go and debate him? Who's going to say, no, we were justified in murdering the Jews and exiling them and stealing their homes and burning things down? No. He said, who will rid me of him? Muhammad bin Maslama said, I will rid you of him, Messenger of Allah. I will kill him for you. Do it then, Muhammad said, if you can. Turning to Bukhari, which is one of the most revered collections of hadith, the prophet said, who is ready to kill Ka'b bin Ashraf, who has really hurt Allah and his apostle? Hurt him how? By telling the truth, that the man that Muhammad was speaking talk that made no sense, and if you don't drive him off, you will not be safe. Muhammad bin Marsala said, oh, Allah's apostle, do you want me to kill him? Muhammad replied in the affirmative, yes. Goes on, this is from Ishaq and from Tabari. Tabari wrote the first history of Islam. Muhammad bin Maslama said, oh, messenger, we shall have to tell lies to kill him. Muhammad said, say whatever you like. You are absolved. You are free to say what you must. In Islam, it is considered appropriate to lie, to lure victims so that they become easier prey. This is a story that we will have to continue because there is much more to it. We've run out of the time in our news commentary hour of the program, but I promise we will return to this story in our program tomorrow. But between now and then, we are going to turn our attention to Yahweh's testimony in the second half of Shattering Myths.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, veterinarian and naturopathic physician. The Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy with an important message. Take charge of your health. Do not continue to blindly follow the system that has...